18. Eyes That Are Blind. Modo turned his back to Octavia and Colette and let his natural form return. At this stage of his transformation there was little pain. This was where his body was meant to be. One day when Modo was a child, Mr. Socrates had given him a hand mirror and let him take his first real look at his own face. He had stared in horror. Mr. Socrates then said, "You are deformed. You are ugly. But remember this day, Modo. It's the day you learned that you've been given an incredible gift. Your unsightly countenance may seem unbearable now, but because of it, the world will always underestimate you." Modo was 5 years old at the time. He was no longer troubled by people underestimating him, nor did he fear the horrified glances of strangers. Who cared about them? No. But the fact that Octavia and Colette couldn't stand to look at him, ah, that seared him. He had grown more comfortable in his hunchbacked shape. Any time he changed into one of his many personas, his skin became itchy. During his training, Mrs. Finchley used to slap him lightly with a wooden ruler if he scratched. Habits such as scratching drew attention. Spies should not have noticeable habits. He slipped on his mask so he wouldn't frighten the two women in case he rolled over in his sleep. Not that there would be much slumber. They were certainly in a tricky situation. No matter how hard he focused his mind, he couldn't imagine how they would find his parents. By now, Lyme and his companion would be well ahead of them. Finally, he stood and began wandering around.
"Are you leaving us?"
Octavia whispered. "No," Modo said. "I need to walk out my aches. If I'm not back in half an hour, look for me."
"I'll send the hound,"
Octavia said, gesturing towards Colette, who seemed to be asleep. Modo found he could see quite clearly in the dim light. He passed through an open door and into what seemed to be a storage room. There were old pews up here. Imagine hauling them up all those stairs. He sat on one of them for a few minutes, rubbing his head, then spied an open doorway on the other side of the room. He was surprised to find the next chamber warm. As he stood in the center of the small room and it dawned on him just what he was seeing, he grew numb with shock. He had assumed the shadows along the walls were rectangular crates, but now he could see there were cradles. Wooden rattles were set along the ledge beside each one. He stepped over to the nearest cradle and looked inside, gasping, when he saw eyes peering back. In a moment he realized that they were the glass eyes of a ceramic doll.
Good Lord, it was a nursery.
Way up here. A hearth had been bricked into the exterior wall. This must have been a place where abandoned infants were raised. He touched the blanket, so carefully tucked around the baby. Each of the other cradles held a ceramic child, also neatly tucked in. Was I once here? Thought Modo. Here, up high, away from the eyes of the parishioners.
"Who walks my halls?"
a male voice whispered in French.
"A ghost?"
Modo stood perfectly still. Someone else was in the room, but he couldn't tell where the voice had come from.
"Speak," the man said softly. "Please speak."
His pleading loosened Modo's tongue. "It is no one," he replied in French.
"There are no ones,
the man said. "A traveller, that is all. I do not want to bother you."
"No bother, no sight. Father is here."
Modo pinpointed the sound. The man was seated in a large chair that faced the hearth. His shadowy figure stood and slowly came around the chair.
"This is my home. My hearth. You are welcome."
"Thank you," Modo said.
"I know your voice,"
the man said. Was he mad?
"You do?" "Yes. I don't forget a voice. A tone."
He began to hum softly, a pleasant sound.
"One does not hear the bells every day without learning the tones. Please come closer."
Modo could see no harm in doing so. As he did, He could see that the man's eyes glowed eerily white. Cataracts caught the moonlight.
"I heard you draw in your breath," the man said. "Yes, I am blind. For decades now. I have forgotten what it is to see. Tones. Tones are my eyes, the identity of a person, the expression on a face. Do you hear the children crying?"
Modo had no idea what he meant.
"No. Come closer, young man. Please."
Modo did so, but before he could react, the old priest had reached out his hands and touched Modo's face. His fingers were knobbed with rheumatism, but they were quick.
"You wear a mask?"
"Yes, to hide a disfigurement."
"Many are afflicted. Some deaf, some poor, some rich. God is mysterious."
"Most certainly so."
"May I?"
the man asked. And before Modo understood his intention, the man had peeled back Modo's mask. He let out a sigh as he traced Modo's cheek.
"What is your accent?"
the father asked.
"Canadian,"
Modo lied.
"I know your face."
He ran his fingers across Modo's ragged cheeks.
"You were the sweetest child. You know me? That's impossible." "All is possible."
"Who are you?"
"I am Father Cambolu."
His fingers continued to trace the lines of Modo's face. They touched his ragged cheeks, caressed his forehead. It felt so gentle and so natural.
"You have always had such a strong face. Even stronger now."
"Thank you," Modo said. "Was this the nursery once?"
"Yes, until Father Mouji closed it down. It was too expensive."
"And when was it closed?"
1860.
"Where did all the children go?"
"I was told they went to proper homes and to other churches."
Who am I?" The father's hands were still on his face.
"You are the boy with the blessed face."
What could that mean?
"Did you meet my parents?"
"What were their names?"
"Ah, I am good with names. Monsieur et Madame Hébert." He did know.
So Modo was indeed an Hébert. The man placed his hands on either side of Modo's head, as if measuring the size of it.
"How old are you now?"
15, Modo replied. "So you really and truly knew me as a child?"
"You were here only a short time. 4 months. As I recall, you rarely fussed. Then Father Mouji came and took you. Said he had found you a home."
"A home?" He had been sold to a travelling freak show. Did that constitute a home? "What do you know of my parents?"
"I wasn't allowed to meet them. In any case, the parents, or should I say the mothers, for it was often the mothers, rarely showed us their faces. Most of the children were abandoned on our doorstep. But your parents had marked you for the church. They were very close to God. Sometimes one can get too close to God."
"What did that mean?"
I
am trying to find them. They did not return to Nanterre after leaving me here." "Do you know where they were going next?" Murdo asked.
"I wanted to know everything about my children,"
Father Cambolu said.
"I would pester Father Mouji incessantly. Sometimes the abandoned babies had names pinned to their shirts. Others had a doll or a soft blanket. I wanted to understand where they had come from, why God had sent them to me."
"Yes, yes. But did you know where my parents went?"
"I did. I did. Father Mouji did tell me what he knew of your parents. He said they intended to travel to Montreuil-sur-Mer. I remember it clearly. It is the town I was born in."
The floor creaked behind him, and the father seemed to look over Modo's shoulder.
"Ah, we have more visitors. It is a glorious night.
Modo knew Colette and Octavia were in the shadows. He adjusted his mask over his face again and motioned for them to stay back. This was his room, his past. They are my friends. It is time for me to depart, but there is so much I must ask you, Modo said, grasping Father Combolio's hands.
I have told you everything I know, except I will tell you my nickname for you. It was Bright Eyes.
With that, he chuckled.
Bright Eyes. Back then I still had enough vision in my left eye to see that much, at least. We must go,
Colette said quietly.
The sun is rising.
Modo was reluctant to release the priest's soft hands. He took one and kissed it.
I will return one day and thank you properly. I look forward to that day, my son. Go with God. Bless you.